Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up Wednesday out there. Welcome to Life, Love, No Chaser. I'm Leah Leone, your host, and with me today, my always hilariously raw and inquisitive real co-host, Leonard Thomas. Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I am wonderful and well. How are you, Leah?
I'm well. Thank you. Together, we make up Life, Love, No Chaser, and we want to thank you for tuning in today. And of course, you can tune in live each and every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, by logging on to blogtalkradio.com/lifelovenochaser, or you can ring up via phone at 347-637-3718. And please, if you are listening on the phone and you change your mind and want to get in on the conversation, simply press 1 on your phone and you'll be in queue to speak with us or our guests. You can also follow us on our page at Blog Talk. We encourage you to do that. We're also on Facebook under Life, Love, No Chaser. You can like our page, or you can see us on Twitter at LL Life Love or LL No Chaser. No matter how you do it, just stay connected to us. We love you, and we hope that you love the show week to week. We really enjoy providing you information, encouraging you, and inspiring you to think outside of the box. Leonard, I am so excited about today. You know that.
How excited are you?
Oh, my goodness, right? That's a punchline, I promise.
Yes.
I'm so excited about this show today because we're doing the show on Police Lives Matter. And I got to say that I got a lot of flack from using that term, which I found to be just absolutely insane. Well, people were angry because of the phrase that came about, Black Lives Matter. And so let me just say to all the people who sent me hate mail, just knock off the mail. That's the first. The second, listen, I get the reason that we are saying that term, Black Lives Matter, because we're fighting social and civic injustice, some police brutality cases. It's a very good cause. I get it. I fully support it. I'm not minimizing it in any way. But unless there's some copyright paperwork filed and I'm just not knowing about it, that saying is fair game. I mean, how many times have we all said, you know, TGIF or any other phrase that just catches on? It isn't exclusive, and I get it. Trust me, I'm a brown sister, right? Minority, both sides. So I get why we need to say Black Lives Matter, but today, Police Lives Matter. What do you have to
Absolutely.
Say about that, Leonard? What do you say about that?
I think it's important that we finally get the flip side of the hype, because I think what has been lacking in all this is the other side of the story. There's always two stories, you know, and now we're going to get the other side of the story. And I think it's important because I think once you walk in another man's footsteps, you have a different perspective. And I think today we're going to bring on the other man's footsteps, you know. So
yeah.
I'm excited about today. I think the officers are coming on today and sharing and giving, because it's important and folks need to hear it, you know. So I think it's Black Lives Matter, Police Lives Matter, and Black on Black Crime Matters. Let's do something about that. Get a phrase
Amen.
For that.
Amen. Yeah, right. Let's hear about that. Nobody's writing me about
right.
that. So let's talk right. about it. So today is our show today, Police Lives Matters. We wanted to do this show because Leonard and I are not about one side, because that's boring and it's not really a real thing, right? We're all about No Chaser on
the
show.
Right.
We want to keep things balanced, and we want to level the playing field of opportunity. We want everybody to be heard. We've been hearing a lot about how awful cops are, how brutal they are. We've been seeing proof of some of those cops, right, in video, cell phone footage, dash cam, body cams, all kind of cams, But today we're going to speak to three cops in particular, and I'm using the word cops, and that's probably not appropriate, but I'm not very PC, and they're going to forgive me when they come on, I'm sure. But we're going to hear from some police officers, I should say, and we're going to hear their story. I wanted them to come on and speak up for themselves, you know, maybe give an opinion about all this hype and negative press. I have some opinions about it when I'm going to give some statistics later on in the show. We're going to get real about this conversation because I want people to understand that not all police officers out there are racist. Not all of them are jerks. Not all of them are intimidators. Not all of them are harassing. Mm-hmm. They are real people. They're someone's father, someone's brother, someone's son. They have lives, and their lives matter because how I see it
Absolutely.
Is that cops are no different in my book than people who are on the front lines in the infantry, baby. They're serving their country and their community. They're just like the military in my mind, and I honor them because I'm telling you, when I have a problem, I dial 911. I don't dial my friend, Leonard.
Mm-hmm. You
I dial
should,
911,
but go ahead. No,
and I hope they show up guns blazing, ready to figure out the situation and to help me out. And so I love cops and police officers who are righteous and good, and a lot of them are out there. So let's join them right now, and let's bring them into the
so
show.
Catherine,
we're going to introduce...
Let me say one thing before we get started.
Of course.
That is, this is, we're not, if you feel like you got to call in and try to blast the police officers, this is not the show.
That's not
what we're doing here.
That's
if you're not.
Not
calling in to ask a question or to elevate them or to praise them, then you don't want to call in today. We're not
That's
blasting
right.
the police.
That's right. This
That's
is not
what
blast
we're doing
the
here.
Police officer
no.
day. And really,
no,
the premise, and we should probably highlight this too, Leonard. I'm glad you brought that up. The premise today is to really honor them and thank them for their service. But also, this wouldn't be a real show if we didn't press them a little bit. So we're going to ask them a couple of questions. Like, you know, Leonard wants to know, if you stop him and he starts running in a full sprint, what are you thinking?
You're not going to catch me.
Leonard's thinking he's going to be able to get the run on. But I want you to answer. So we're going to give you some scenarios. We want you to answer. Because one of the things that we always talk about on the show is implicit bias. It's a completely subconscious concept. And people have it, humans have it. You can't cut it off, whether you're police officer or otherwise, or trained indifferently or otherwise. It happens. And so we want to give them a couple of scenarios and press them a little bit and hear about what they have to say. But without further ado, let's get them on the line.
Yeah.
First up, we have the esteemed Dr. Schultz. Hello, Dr. Schultz. Hmm. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leah and Leonard. Good to hear from you.
Good
hey,
to hear from you,
welcome.
Too. So we're going to get on the next person we have in line here, and we have our sheriff on the West Coast. Hello, sheriff on the West Coast. How are you?
I'm how are you? Thank you for having me.
Good. Hello.
How you
hello.
Doing?
Okay. And now we have Officer Pendleton, and he's reaching out from Oklahoma. Hello, Officer Pendleton. How are you?
Doing really well. Thanks for having me today.
Good.
Welcome.
Thank you for being on. Let us just all say welcome, welcome. If you could see me, I'd be curtsying down to you right now. But thank you for taking time. We know you're extremely busy, all three of you. How we're going to do the show today is you're going to be on, and we're going to just have open up questions. Anybody can take it. It's free game. Anybody can speak. And we're going to have you introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your background one by one. So, Dr. Schultz, go ahead. Take it. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm old. I just recently retired as a police administrator. I'm pushing up against about 40 years of involvement in the criminal justice system as an educator and administrator and practitioner. About half of my career has been in teaching, whether in an academy or university setting in criminal justice, and the other half is being in uniform law enforcement with a variety of assignments over the years. My real interest in use of force issues and public relations issues came about 8 years ago when one of my officers was involved in a shooting, and I had to ramp up and become an expert. And in my follow-up reading and research, I really uncovered a lot of things that I hadn't known in the previous 30-some years of my police experience, and all of that's so very relevant to the social fabric that's being stressed in these recent days.
Yes, and we welcome you and we thank you for your background, and we're excited because you are, I'm sure, a body of information. So next up, our sheriff from the West Coast, and we're naming him that because he chose to be anonymous, and we respect that and appreciate that. We don't want anybody to get in trouble for anything they may say or be taken out of context. We know how that happens. So our sheriff mm-hmm. on the West Coast, please tell us a little bit about what you do.
Been on the job for close to 26 years. patrolled in that 26 years. I've worked various assignments, anywhere from community affairs to SWAT, gangs, narcotics, and I'm just looking forward to retirement. I can see it in the future.
Well, don't retire just yet. We're happy to have you on the line. Just hold on, just
absolutely,
a little few more minutes for us. Okay, and next up on the line, we have Officer Pendleton. And let me just brag about Officer Pendleton's area and where he's coming from. He's working under Chief Humphrey out there. Big shout-out to Chief Keith Humphrey. He was on our show before when we did our town hall meeting. He's absolutely amazing, and he probably will attest to this, Officer Pendleton. But he's coming out of Norman, Oklahoma. We're so glad to have you. Hello, Officer Pendleton. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me again. I do have a great pleasure working for Chief Keith Humphrey, very forward-thinking, very intelligent man who does a really great job of leading our city. This is really an honor to be able to wear this badge and wear this uniform. I grew up in Oklahoma for the most part and attended the University of Oklahoma, where I got my undergraduate and graduate degrees. Went into teaching right after that, working for the university, fundraising also for the athletic department, and before I got back into what I always wanted to do, which was law enforcement, and I've worked here since 2009. Unlike the other gentlemen, I'm not close to retirement. I'm really just enjoying continuing to learn this career and to serve the citizens that I have the pleasure of working with.
Well, thank you and welcome to all. And again, this is Life, Love, No Chaser. If you're joining us, we're talking about Police Lives Matters. We just want to jump in there. We believe in just jumping in there. And one of the things that Leonard and I are always talking about is the fact that if you look at this situation and this climate that we're in right now, even the people that are hating on me for using the term Police Lives Matters, I mean, we are at civil unrest. I mean, things are getting really brewed and overdone. But I wanted to hone us in on a couple of things, and I wanted you guys to talk about this particularly. So there's 319 million people in the United States. Of that amount, I think the statistic was somewhere between 384 people this last year were killed in connection with a police officer. Now, of that amount, 80% of those people were armed in some form of fashion. So it wasn't just police going rogue, okay, like we see in the media, these few cases that we see. And I'm saying few because when we look at this thing as a huge picture, we have 318 million Americans, and if you're only accounting for 384 people who have died in some police altercation, that's not a lot. And so I'm an optimist, not a pessimist. We can pessimistically view this and say, oh, this is terrible. Police are just outrageous, but that's a lot of people. And I'm not suggesting that there's some things that we don't know about, because not all of them are being videotaped, and we don't always get the media on those things. And so I'm sure there's some lives that are being lost that we don't know about. But the ones that we've been documented, we're doing pretty well, okay? What do you guys think about that? Anybody can take it.
Yeah, let me just step up and talk about some statistics. There are actually more people killed by justifiable homicide by civilians every year than there are by police officers. And the studies that have been done, a Federal Bureau of Justice study, cites that there are 45 million face-to-face contacts annually between citizens and the police. Fewer than 1% of those citizens reported any use of force, and out of those, 74% of those reporting that they had been the victim of use of force self-reported that their own behavior had instigated the force. So I appreciate very much your lead-in to looking at a really narrow number. It's statistically insignificant. Humanly, socially, it's very significant because armed government agents interacting in a democracy is important. But we're really looking at a magnifying glass of a very, very small number. So I appreciate you bringing that out right at the outset.
Yeah.
So here's the question for you guys. Putting a uniform on, do you feel, because of all the negative publicity, do you feel any ill way about putting a uniform on? Do you feel bad? Are you embarrassed? Or does it have nothing to do with you?
It's got nothing to do with me. And
okay.
I think that's a big issue that's not addressed. And I can't tell you how many times I've been approached in just recent months, you know, from people that say, man, you guys are having a rough time of it. You guys are, you're in the media, and I'm what guys? You know, and they say, well, the police. You understand? And I haven't been in the news. I haven't been accused of excessive force. I haven't beaten anybody up or shot any unarmed people. don't lump me in or any of the other hardworking men and women of law enforcement, don't lump us in to that same boat because of what's going on in the media. You address every situation individually. Don't just put a blanket over it and say, the police are this way. The police are that way. Because if I came to you and I said, hey, brother, you guys are having it rough, man. You guys are in the media. There was just a drive-by shooting. Then I'd be deemed a racist. It's a two-way street.
Right.
Don't want it done
right.
to, you know, you don't want it done to you. Don't do it to me.
Anybody else want to take that, the former question about the statistic and or else Leonard's question?
I think it is really difficult for people to fully understand the fact that law enforcement doesn't get involved with people when they're having their best day. That is not something that we had called for. People don't call and say, hey, I'm having a wonderful day. Can you stop by? You know, that's not when we are called. Okay, we are called when things are going bad and people need help or people are hurting someone else. That's when we're called. So just by the very nature, it's a confrontational profession. This is by the very nature. And so when those incidences occur, that is just part of what happens. Are there things that we can do better as a whole? Absolutely. Are there things that we can improve on as a whole? Absolutely. And those are things that we're working out. But people are easily, like the gentleman said previously, lumping everyone in to something that is really not necessarily a everyone issue. There are a few people here and there doing things that are inappropriate and wrong, and we will tell you there's nothing more that cops hate more than a dirty cop.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, Leonard, I'd also like to say, you know, is there a difference going out today in uniform? I was in uniform just up to a year ago. And the reality is there is a more of a concern of a target being on us, a laser dot being on us. Several years ago, and a camera, yes. I did a survey that showed that 13% of officers, responding officers, had vandalism to their personal property done because of their job. 63% of them had been injured in some way but didn't seek treatment because they just wanted to walk it off. 21%, again, this is the average officer within 12 months, had to seek medical care in an emergency room for an injury. 40% have been put at risk because of exposure to body fluids. 77% have been threatened that I'm going to report you and take your badge. 88% have been threatened with a lawsuit. 80% have been said if I ever catch you out of uniform. So these are things, and this was about 6 years ago that I did this survey. And all of these things, I suspect, are probably at least slightly on the rise because the fringe knuckleheads out there have been given social permission to hate on the police at a different level than just about any time in the last 40 years that I've seen.
I absolutely agree with you, Dr. Schultz, and I think, and that's the reason why we want to do this show, because I think, as someone just said, listen, the fact of the matter is, I don't think that any of the good cops or police officers like the rogue or bad cops either. I'm sure either the three of you have watched the video that we've seen. I'm sure any of us playing quarterback on, you know, armchair quarterback could say, wow, this dude is out of control. You're asking somebody to put your cigarette out and then they don't do it, you turn up. That's a little bit outrageous, okay? But we don't have all the details. And that's the other thing I wanted to highlight. You know, a lot of times the media gets on this stuff, but we're not released of all the details. And so I want to speak to that just now, but I wanted to also mention the National Law Enforcement Bureau put out that in 2014, 126 officers were killed on the line of duty. So this isn't just one-sided, people, okay? And again, on this show, we like to highlight personal responsibility, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later when we ask some of the questions and fire off and get some opinions. But this is also about personal responsibility, and Leonard and I are always saying, listen, if you're driving dirty, and that happened to be the luckiest moment of your life when that cop pulls you over, that's probably going to be some repercussions and some consequences of cause and effect in your life. So you can't be mad at the cop or then try to shoot him like this officer that just lost his life recently in the media. So what do you guys think about this whole notion of, you know, cops are just out of control and all of this right to think that you're... And you know what's crazy? So I've been looking at this since the 60s and 50s and 40s. Cops have always taken a bad rap. I mean, you've been pigs, right? I don't know where that saying came from. Pigs, donut chasers, all kinds of things, which is interesting because if you have a good police squad and a police department that's great, you want those people to know, you want to know them, first of all. You want them to know your family, your kids. You want to see your kid and say, hey, get home to your mother, knock it off. That's how I think about community policing, which is why I loved Keith Humphreys from Norman, Oklahoma. But what do you guys think about this whole societal pressure now to just really hate on the cops from these instances and not even regard that 126 of you were killed last year, not even see you as a hero like we do the military? What do you think about that? Anybody can take it.
I'll jump in really quickly. One thing that you'll find if you look at the American military as they are serving overseas and in different capacities and humanitarian efforts and wanting to help other countries, you will find that asking military members that people aren't as respectful of them as they are at home. People don't really like to see the USA on the patches on their shoulder. They don't have the same respect that they have here. But when they come home, people are really appreciative and they like to see them. And it's because they are doing the exact same things that we're doing, but they're doing them abroad. They're doing them in other places. And so if you brought those same individuals here and they did the same duties, people would probably look at them the same way that they look at local law enforcement. They do not like the authority. I'm doing air quotation marks here. People don't like being under authority. And so any type of authority is already going to have some type of dissident. And so that's just going to be acceptable in some regard. But it is very much a time right now where people are playing it up, and social media has made it very easy for people to pass along the negativity. And you ask any media member, and they will tell you that positivity doesn't sell. Negativity does.
No.
And so those negative stories sell like hotcakes, and they will keep on selling like hotcakes because they will happen randomly, and they will continue to happen in random swaps because that's just the nature of confrontational law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Well, Sheriff, did you have something to toss in there before I get started?
No, that was pretty much it. Like I said, bad press, it sells. You know, everything's sensationalized, and the media is very careful how they word things to keep adding fuel to the fire. Instead of just reporting facts, they have to put their head on it so they can get the ratings.
It's never that you're dealing with noncompliance. It's another beating. You know, that word beating is always out there. I think cops today are the Vietnam veterans of the 1960s. People a little bit older than I remember coming back from overseas duty, coming into airports and being spit on, children, running to their moms and being called the soldiers being called baby killers and that kind of stuff. And it took 20 years for us to start separating the badness of a war from the service of the soldier. And right now we're in this moral panic. We've done it with child abductions. We did it with AIDS. We may have done it with global warming. And right now it's police brutality. And we're just inundated with this message of bad cop, bad cop, bad cop. And it's going to take 3, 5, maybe 10 years to get back to some level of normal.
Yeah, I agree. Let's take a quick question, Leonard. Hold on, before your question, we have a question from the audience, so let's take a quick question. Life, Love, No Chaser, you're live on the line.
Yes, my name's Tyrone. I first of all wanted to thank those police officers for their service, and I just wanted to, maybe not so much as a question, but to just kind of get their insights and comments on the so-called blue wall of the camaraderie between police officers, where, you know, it's looked upon that they're looked down upon if they basically snitch on each other. I mean, in some of the recent incidents, you know, we've seen evidence where, you know, false reports were obviously generated and corroborated with other officers, and then they kind of circle the wagons. And I guess it's hard if you've got, you know, the so-called bad cop in your ranks, you know, how do you guys, you know, deal with that? That's just I'd like to hear your insights on that incident.
Thank you, Tyrone. That's a great question. So anybody have at it?
Yeah, Tyrone, I appreciate your call, and thanks for the pat on the back, and thanks for the service. We're as the Jack Webb said on Dragnet years ago, the problem with policing is you have to recruit from the human race, and that's true with doctors. It's true with lawyers. You don't see lawyers turn in lawyers and doctors turn in doctors, and that's not to excuse the reality of some of those things that happen. We do have criminal sanctions against police officers who failed to report use of force. A lot of those were enacted after the Rodney King incident back in 91-ish. But, you know, police officers, we talk about police accountability. There's a high degree of accountability. There's federal civil rights criminal laws that can be enforced. There's federal lawsuits, state criminal laws, state lawsuits, department sanctions. So there are a lot of eyes on police behavior, and even more so now. And so the idea that there's a lot of stuff being done that we get away with is much less true today than at any time in the history of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, but
go ahead.
What about, we're not addressing the question. The question is, okay, I'll rephrase the question. Is there pressure put upon you to stay behind the blue wall? And is there, you look down upon if you stand up against another officer for doing wrong? Because everybody hates a bad cop, but no one says anything. And we don't know that part. I'm not saying you don't. I'm saying we don't know that you guys are saying anything. So is there pressure not to be the snitch? Or is there pressure not to come against it?
Well, there's nothing that's absolute. Nothing's absolute.
Okay.
Do these kind of things happen? Absolutely. Is it the norm? In my experiences, I would say no.
Okay.
And like it was just stated, especially in today's law enforcement, I can't think of anybody that's willing to lose their job or go to prison for another officer who's doing something that they shouldn't do. Does it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, I wouldn't say it's the norm.
Okay.
I think it's really a cultural thing for a specific agency and area also. It's one of those things that if things are tolerated, then they'll continue to be tolerated. If they're not tolerated, then they won't be. So if it's generally accepted that those types of things are inappropriate, then they will absolutely not be followed. But if you have that kind of culture, then it will be very pervasive and very cancerous. But in today's society, that type of policing, that type of mentality isn't very common because it can't be. Things are way too open and way too public.
Yeah,
I would also say that culture remark is very accurate. I think we have over 10,000 separate police agencies in the country, and each one of them have their own culture. And sometimes within those departments, they have subcultures on different shifts or different assignments. I know, speaking as an administrator who has worked the streets, I've always been in small departments. I'm in a position where I have to discipline my officers, but I also have to rely on them to cover me when I'm going in on a weapon call or a burglary in progress. And so the camaraderie that happens when your life literally depends on your partner, and you don't want to think that your partner's watching you for the opportunity to go to the press or go to management and turn you in for something. That's an element of that seems conspiratorial, but it's just human nature, and I don't say that to excuse. But the leadership and the culture and the management of persons is where a lot of the responsibility has to lie. There's computer programs that will, show a police leader when there are an unusual number of complaints on somebody, or when somebody's pulling over more of a certain racial profile than another. So I think the real onus from a realistic standpoint has to be on the leadership to do that kind of monitoring.
So I want to shift gears just for a minute before we go to the heated stuff that really gets intense. Just if you could, the three of you, just give us a couple of seconds. Why did you even join? Why did you become a police officer? Was your notion and your dream, does it meet the same objective now? Do you have the same viewpoint as to why you even got in there? Or has it changed so much in the climate and the times that we're living that it's kind of jaded you in some way about how you came in and how you now look toward your job? So you could take that one by one, if that'd be great. Dr. Schultz, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I guess I probably got the longest teeth here. I was 19 when I went into the Missouri Army National Guard to become a military policeman as my assignment, and was just itching to do that. I was sworn in when I was 21, and really would have stayed in the business except for some political issues that hastened my retirement. every day that I was a police officer, and I continued to have a reserve commission even when I was a classroom teacher at the university level, every day was a day of privilege and service. Every day you knew that you might save a life or make a difference. Every day that you walked down the street or drove down the street and somebody you know that somebody was saying, I'm glad they're here, and the people that were saying, I wish they weren't here, are making the people that said, I'm glad they're here, being glad that you're there. So it's always been a privilege and an honor. I'm thrilled that I have been surrounded by heroes for the last four decades. It's mm-hmm. been a tremendous privilege, and my chest swells when I see what the men and women are still doing out there, 99.9% of them, the vast majority of the time. That really hasn't changed. My idealism hasn't changed. Having said that, it's a great time to be a civilian, I must say.
Nice. West Coast?
Come on.
Oh, I love the laugh. Oh, we're going to get some good meat now.
I always say when God made me, he made a cop. You know, this is all I've ever wanted to do. From day one, this is what I've always wanted to do. And has my views changed and my perceptions changed on law enforcement and doing the job? To be totally honest with you, I'm tired. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. You know, I'm tired of getting beaten up. I'm tired of, you know, you can't do anything right. You know, if I stop that car that I think is dirty, the hair on the back of my neck is standing up, and I'm trying to do good police work, and, you know, God forbid it goes wrong, then I'm a racist. Mm-hmm. I'm right across the pole, and it's in the media. If I don't stop that same car, and they do a drive-by and kill some little girl playing hopscotch out in front of her house, those same people that are screaming from my head will be saying, why didn't you stop them? I can't win. There's no winning. Mm-hmm. That's where I am. There's no winning in this profession. Mm. It seems like at every turn, like I said before, that blanket, because of the few, now everybody in law enforcement is thrown under this veil, and we're questioned at every turn. And in a situation where I might have a split-second decision to make whether or not I go home safely to my family, do I throw that punch? Do I pull that trigger? In the heat of the moment when the adrenaline's going, I better get that right. I better get it right. Because then out of the woodworks here comes all the Monday morning quarterbacks that have months, years, to sit behind a desk nice and safe and say, well, you could have done this. Did you think about doing that? And I ask myself daily now, you know, is it even worth it anymore? That's where I am.
First of all, let me just tell you, this show is called No Chaser for a reason, and I absolutely love your answer, your authenticity, you're authentic in saying that truth, and especially among two people are like, yay, yay, because I think Officer Pendleton says nowhere near retirement. So let me just say, I love your answer. It speaks to the segue when we're going to finish hearing Officer Pendleton, but it's going right to where I'm going. So thank you for that lead-in. And the other, whenever you do retire, your first drink's on me, buddy. Okay. So,
I know.
Officer Pendleton, please respond.
Yes, ma'am. I wanted to be in police work since I was about 8 years old.
Wow.
I grew up in a domestic violence situation, and there was a Creek County deputy who came to my house. Back in that time, domestic violence is really a petty misdemeanor. Really nothing would happen. But he took extra time. He took a lot of extra effort and got my mom, my brother and sister and I into a shelter. He went out of his way to get us there and make us feel safe. You know, in the first 8 years of my life, I didn't have a lot of rest. I didn't have a lot of peace. And having that first night of sleep where I felt safe was incredible. I can remember the smells. I can remember the images. I remember his car. I remember his face. I don't know his name. But that change that he took, that extra time he took, that meant a whole lot to me as an 8-year-old kid. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to give that same feeling to someone else. That's why I got into the profession. And, you know, why I do it now hasn't changed. The current climate isn't changing the honorable profession that I see. What I do see is I am getting more of a charge to hopefully speak out for and encourage some of the officers who are on that retiring end, who have had some of these tough experiences, because this gets to an area where people don't talk about. Police officers experience a lot of trauma, a lot of trauma. And there's a movement called Code 9 where they're really trying to acknowledge the trauma that is experienced and the exhaustion that you have at the end of a career. People don't look at the suicide levels of law enforcement. They don't look at the mental health aspect of the trauma that it's experienced. And so for these people who put their lives on the line, who wake up in the morning, go out and protect people, and then come home and have to be a normal citizen functioning like everyone else, people don't see that. They can understand trauma when people go off to war and come back with different ailments, but they don't believe that and see that for people who do this every day. It's very much the same, and hopefully it'll get to the point where people start to support people and the mental health recovery that needs to be done for these officers.
I love all of your answers. I really do, and I'm so thank you for allowing us into your mind.
I love you guys. Yeah. I love you guys.
Big hugs. Life, love, no chaser. If you're on the line listening, you want to ask a question, press 1. Call us up, 347-637-3718. If you're listening via the web, here's why I love that the question and the answer, because exactly the point you just made. Again, military people and officers in my mind are no different because they're laying their lives on the line every single day. They have PTSD, just like the military guy who comes back and he's completely shell-shocked. And more importantly, you're in the live line of fire. People are threatening. The consensus is you're pigs, you're hated, we hate you, we don't want to see you, yet we call you every time there's a crisis. So the reason I wanted that to be known is because I think that the general public, and the reason why we wanted to do this show, they have misunderstood police officers and this work. It takes a special person. I'm saying again, I'm not that special. I would never do it. I commend all officers who do that are good cops. But you need to hear the heart. See, so what's happening, I think, in society is that we don't have empathy for each other. We don't have any thought how the officer feels because we don't see him as a family person. We just see him as a harassment. You know, we don't see that he's going home to some little kid that's saying, Daddy or Mummy. And the other is that we don't think that this is hard stuff. I mean, you're walking up into a potential death situation. I mean, that's very challenging.
Every day.
And I want it. Yeah, every single day. And I wanted people to hear your heart, why you got in it. Because a lot of people think this, too. Well, he's just some rogue ex-military person who just has a chip on his shoulder and a power control problem.
Who likes guns.
Who likes guns. He's a member of the NRA, and he may be. But he's wanting to shoot. He's trigger-happy and ready and crazy. And I wanted you to tell your heart, so thank you for exposing it. And it leads me into this next notion. Leonard, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask one quick question before we went to the next one. And that question was, because you strap that gun on every day and you know you're putting your life on the line every day, is there an area you don't like to go in or you avoid because of the threat of your life being in jeopardy, or it's whatever it takes, I'm going for it? I just was curious about that.
It's whatever it takes, you're going for it. Otherwise, you wouldn't do the job.
Yep, we don't have a choice. It's not even a second thought. You may think you may bring someone extra with you, but you're going.
There's no courage if there wasn't fear to begin with.
Amen. Dr. Schultz. Let the church say amen to that. Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
People don't understand. People don't understand that, you know, we're out here braving the elements. We're subject to disease and ridicule. We're sacrificing birthdays, holidays, family functions, baby's first steps, baby's first words, your things will never get back. And it's not for the fame and fortune. It's so that people can sleep safely at night. There's a job that needs to be done, and it takes a special breed to do this job. See, people can sit back and always say, you know, because they watch some movie or TV show and say, well, the police could have done it differently because I saw them shoot a gun out of the guy's hand on T.J. Hooker. And that's just not the reality.
Right.
It's not the reality. And like you touched on earlier, unless you walked a mile in my shoes, the only thing I want to hear from you is thank you.
Yeah. Wow.
Thank you.
I love that. Thank you. Well, thank you. because I know I'm always dialing 911 some kind of way when I'm scared. But anyway, there's a lot of people in my bushes. That's an inside joke between Leonard and I, but we're moving on. One of the things we want to talk about, and then another reason why I wanted that question in the next segue is because now we're going to heat up a little bit. So, of course, I mentioned it earlier. We talked about it before on our show, is implicit bias. Everyone has it. You know, you're just impartial to judging implicitly, explicitly. There's biases. There's all kind of mental constructs. And they come out in these associations that we don't always align with our declared belief. You know, so people always say, oh, I'm not a racist because I got one friend that's black or white, you know. But implicit bias happens on a subconscious level. You don't even know it's happening. And our brains are so complex that these associations occur. But my question, and what I want to highlight about implicit bias, is this fact alone. People forget that no matter how long you've been doing this job, police officers are trained to be situationally aware, to always be alert, and to always, is someone texting, Leonard?
I'm not texting.
Sounded.
I'm not texting.
Oh, you're not texting?
That's
someone's
not my
texting.
Fault.
We always hear
but we hear
texting.
It.
Yeah. Anyway, you're always alert and you're always trained to be aware of your surroundings and what's happening to you at any given time. The reason I want to talk about implicit bias is because after so long in the career, do you think you could ever turn that off? Because I think people think you're supposed to be some self-governing ability, like some guru and brain mastermind, that, like a Jedi, to go inside of yourself and turn all this stuff off and then show up to the person's car a totally different beast. And it just doesn't happen that way, so we need to clear the air. Where does the line stop where you become police officer and the line is so blended at this point that you're police officer and you don't ever turn that off? Or do you? So that's the question.
Well, let me use this illustration. If I were given a job to clean out 500 surplus high school lockers, and at about locker 399, I ran across a rattlesnake, that would be pretty traumatic. But if I had a job of cleaning out 500 surplus high school lockers, and my boss said, you know, I think there's a rattlesnake in one or two of those lockers, my approach to that job would be entirely different. So. Trauma and stress and the way that a crisis embeds neural pathways into our brain so it teaches us how to respond in the future. A crisis can happen from a single incident like a shooting or a traumatic death, but it can also happen from constant chronic low-level stress, and the officer is in that constant chronic low-level stress interspersed with high levels of stress. So they're always on. They're always conditioned yellow. They've always got adrenaline pumping through their body, even if they're driving from the donut shop back to the station to do their reports. and so that part of what you talked about is that's just part of our human nature. It's kind of embedded into our brain. And it really takes a lot to be completely objective. And we never will be, because most of our thinking and decision-making is really, really done at a sub-awareness level in our brain. And that's, you know, to pry that out and to never make a decision because one of the factors in the decision that we're making is because a person is from a certain neighborhood or has a certain skin tone or driving a certain kind of car. Not sure we can erase that. And, you know, from a tactical survival, get me to the end of the day without getting killed, point of view, not sure that we should completely.
Yeah, I love that.
So your experience will dictate how you react in the present based on what you've experienced.
Right, because we don't have time to make decisions using the front of our brain, that frontal cortex.
Yeah.
All of us think that we operate up there, but almost none of our decisions are made up there. They're made in the more primitive parts of the brain, which is based on our experience. What happened when I had this set of factors the last time is going to,
right,
going to predict how we react the next time.
Exactly. Does anybody want to piggyback or say anything different before I go to the next question? Okay, and we're moving on. So that's exactly
I have a question. I do have a
go
question
ahead,
with this.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is this. So that goes into profiling. I think that's the direction
that's
you're
where
moving
I'm going
to.
Next. Yeah, that's exactly
okay.
Where I'm going.
Because
so save your question. Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to jump in front of it because to the go ahead.
Oh, No, because that's where I'm going. Because, again,
okay.
you know, implicit social cognition or implicit bias is all about our attitude. And it combines our stereotypes. It combines every image that's been in front of us since we were little. This is all subconscious programming, people. We cannot turn this stuff off. You may think that you're this self-governing person who's able to get in and out of your brain, but as we just heard Dr. Schultz say, you cannot. And so that leads me to the next phase, and I want to talk about this because I'm so tired of hearing the complaint, and I get it. Don't take me wrong. I get it, okay? So racial profiling, just on its basis, you're just stopping every black person because they're black. You're stopping every white person because they're white, no, and so on and so forth. Dead wrong all day long, okay? However, profiling is necessary. It's a necessary evil. It's a necessary good. It has to occur. You're not going to be in Iraq saying you're looking for a Muslim woman in a burqa and then pull over an old white lady with blonde hair. You just aren't. Very far in the investigation if you do. We've also heard of profiling and forensic profiling, and more notable example of that would be the Silence of the Lambs and Clarice and Dr. Lecter. They're going on about the serial killer makeup. It's a necessary evil to investigation. How else do you expect a police officer to find a criminal if he does not look for the type of the criminal that he's been warned about in the meeting before his day even begins at the squad, you know, at the department? So let's talk about profiling. What do you guys think about it? Well, let's take West Coast. What do you think about profiling? What's your view?
You hit it on the head. It's a necessary evil, but for some reason, and I don't know if it's because people are constantly trying to be politically correct and spare everyone's feelings, but it is what it is. You know, based on my experiences, I know that this type of person that dresses this way, that, you know, is driving that kind of car, in my experience, is a bad guy.
Mm.
So you can't help but to approach it like, you're a bad guy, until I find out differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes back to, if I let him go and something bad happens, then I should have stopped him. But
right.
If I do stop them, then here come the, you know, I'm a racist, and you only stop me because I'm black or, like you said, Hispanic or white, whatever. But it is a necessary evil. It is what it is.
Absolutely. Officer Pendleton?
I'm a man of color, so I see things on multiple levels. Have I been contacted inappropriately or stopped when I probably shouldn't have because of my skin color? Absolutely, I have. But here comes a really important part of that. How I handled myself dictated how that contact ended.
Yeah.
I was respectful. I was appropriate. I more than likely called them out on the inappropriateness of stopping me, but I was respectful in doing so. You know, is profiling something that is necessary? There's a criminal profile, and then there are racial profiles and there are stereotypes. A criminal profile does look a certain way depending on criminal acts, criminal areas. They're very complex. It's not as simple as people make it out to be. And not all profiles are bad profiles. And so for safety reasons, at least, it's important to know if a person is a gang member, this is something you might see. This is an image of a gang member. And so I'm going to be on high alert if I see these images, because at the very least of it, I'm going home safely to my family at all costs. I'm going to take care of what I need to take care of so I make it home safely and keep everyone safe. So profiling isn't necessarily part of the job. It is very much so, but criminal versus racial are very different.
Totally. Dr. Schultz?
You know, the elephant in the room, or on the internet in this case, is the overrepresentation of African Americans in the culture, the subculture of criminal offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when we talk about this, and you alluded to it at the beginning of the program, when we talk about this, people want to put their hands over their ears and scream and say, oh, no, you're a racist, that's not really relevant. But today, four black young people under the age of 22 will be murdered in this country today, a little over four a day. And most of those will be killed by black perpetrators. If you took all of the people in the last given FBI reporting crime stats, all of the African-American citizens who were murdered by African-American citizens, and you stack them four across, they would stack to the observation deck of the Empire State Building. About half of our murder victims are black when they represent about 15% of our population. Blacks are overrepresented in the number of people who murder police officers. And so, you know, when you have an entire segment of the population, and I think it's much more poverty-related than it is race-related, but, you know, our legacy of race relations has generated that poverty, you know, my editorial opinion. And you have poor prenatal care, you have poorer education, you have poorer housing, you have poorer opportunities, you have poorer education. You take all those factors, and then at age 17, a young man has an encounter with a police officer, and they end up in jail, which, of course, is disproportionately people of color. You can't blame the police officer for that. There's a whole social context that's gone along with that, and it's just easy to look at the guy with the badge and say, well, there's our problem. That's not really our problem.
Mm-hmm. I will add to that, and I thank you for that truth. I will add to that, in addition to one of the stats that I found, black people were killed three times more than whites or other minorities when they were encountered by the police. And we do know there is a disparate number of black people being stopped. But one of, I think it was Officer Pendleton who said the next thing that I'm going to, which is critical. Okay, so before we move from profiling, let me just say this. Leonard, tell your bank story, because I think it's relevant at this point. Tell your bank story, Leonard.
Last Christmas, I was in Chase Bank in Burbank, California, and I walked in, spoke to everybody like I always do. They spoke back. I'm like, damn, I must look good today because everybody's speaking and looking at me. I get in line. I'm the seventh person in line. I look up, and all of a sudden, seven police officers are coming in the door, guns drawn, and they're pointing it at me, but I don't know they're pointing it at me. I'm thinking they're pointing at somebody else, and I'm like, who, me? They're like, yeah, come over here. I'm like, no, I'm not, because if I walk over there, I'm by myself. I'm going to stay with these seven people in line, so if you shoot me, you shoot them. And then he was like, get over here. And, of course, I walked over, and I was like, what's going on? He said, somebody robbed a bank, just like you. I'm like, are you kidding me? At first, I said, this is some bullshit. This is profiling. And he was like, I said, let me see the picture. They said, no problem. They got the picture. He looked like me. He looked like me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And so I thanked them, you know, and they wasn't rude, but all their guns were drawn, and they were coming at me, but the picture looked like me. He was fat. I'm not fat. He was fat, but he had a goatee. He was bald-headed, and I'm like, I had a hat on my head. And he was like, dude, you just robbed two Chase banks today. And I'm like, wow. Yeah, so that's profile. But that's more than a profile. That's identity. You look like the guy.
Well, it's a criminal profiling, which we talked about earlier, and it's a necessary. I mean, they had to figure out, because then that was the third bank hit by you, Leonard, right? So I love that story,
sure.
And the reason why, and as Officer Pendleton said, this is the next place we're going. Listen, profiling has to happen. Stop tripping out when it does. When it happens to you, if you're innocent, okay, and you have nothing going on, take it on the chin, and keep it in stride. It is not time for you to turn up and act crazy. That's why I wanted for us to talk about it, because people need to hear that it's necessary to any investigation. And if anyone has any different ideas about it, please call up the show right now and let us know how you think police are supposed to go about investigation without doing some sort of criminal profiling, not racial, but criminal. The second
Oh, go ahead. You have a second. Go ahead.
No, the second is that we need to be understanding of this notion to keep our streets safe. And it is not a time for us to get crazy and to turn up on the police officer and find ourselves, because remember, he's already looking at you suspiciously with reasonable suspicion. Now you're turned up because of it. Now he's thinking maybe you are guilty, right? Now he's elevating. And I want to talk about that. So let's get into there. What were you going to say, Leonard?
Basically, what you guys are saying is, it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, sounds like a duck. There's a possibility it's a duck, and I got to act accordingly based on those circumstances. That's what you're saying, right?
But Lee and Leonard, I will say that what the surveys do in this you know, when we started having legislation requiring statistics on stops and the race of the people that we contacted. What we did find that the disparity was not so much in who we contacted, but what happened after the contact. And we found that law enforcement does tend to ask for consent searches more from people of color and minorities and men, and less asking, you know, further investigation with white males and certainly with white women.
Why do you think that is, Dr. Schultz? Wait, don't go to but. Why do you think that is? What do you think is going on there?
I think it's that kind of unconscious awareness level of our experience that causes us to differentially enforce with minorities, and that's just a reality that I think that the statistics have uncovered. And then what we find out is that the percentage of contraband and illegal stuff that we find on our consent searches really isn't any different between white folks and black folks and brown folks. And so that means that we do end up with the majority population getting away with stuff that the minority population is less likely to get away with. Now, I'm not talking about planting evidence. You know, if you're guilty, you're guilty, and if you happen to get caught, you happen to get caught. But there is a statistical disparity between what we do after the encounter with minorities and what we do with majorities. And that's a management issue. That can be addressed. You look at trends and graphs, and enlightened managers will keep an eye on that and adjust their training and expectations. You know, in general, we're supposed to distrust everybody, you know. And if anybody says, you think I'm guilty, I'm saying, yeah, probably, until, you know, the presumption of innocence is for juries, it's not for cops.
Yeah.
But that is a reality that we need to deal with as a profession, and that lies on leadership.
Do any of you want to respond to that?
I think there's something also that's important that people aren't hearing is people don't realize what officers get before they get there. People don't know what story someone has called in. They don't know what we've been told and what we think we're showing up to. And so that is a big part of how we arrive and how we show up and how many show up is what people tell us when we get there. As in Leonard's experience, they were going on information they were given. And they responded appropriately for the information they were given. And so there are times where that occurs and people are really upset about it. But if they were the victim on the receiving end, they would have wanted that same type of presence.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Absolutely. It's
really important people will be able to be objective and to look at the fact that sometimes officers are just responding with the best information they have.
Okay, and now's the fun part, folks. Thank you for that. We're going to turn up a little bit, just a little bit, and we're going to just give you some scenarios, and you just anybody can take it, shoot at it, because you just said something great. Okay, we see the one guy. He's pulled over. We see six cars, and we're always crying about it. Why does it take all those cops' cars? Okay, what's that about? Why are there six cars? One guy.
I want to know is every time you see a fire truck, why are there six firemen around?
Yeah.
Because they all came in the same fire truck.
They're called to the same posse with the same hose.
They have no choice. They're on the same truck. Well, the six police cars pull up to one guy. Why?
Oh, yeah, tell the public why.
It could be various reasons. I'll tell you one thing around here, when we have a new training academy come out, we try to let the public know, hey, you may see more officers on a call. It doesn't mean that anything serious is going on necessarily, but sometimes officers that are new will go around for the experience of the call. So you will have a normal police stop where you would normally have one officer, or you will have two because there are two riding in that car. So people see two officers and they think something serious is happening. You have a different call, you know, where maybe there's been a burglary. Well, now you may have two different cars, and now you have four officers there because there's officers that are training. Maybe an officer comes and he has a dog with him, and so now you have another car. Now you've got three cars and five officers.
And a dog.
And it looks
like
a much bigger deal than it really is.
What do you do when you get a Jew, a white boy? Yeah. It's a compound. I love it.
It's very fluid.
No, really, here's why I love it, and this is why I love these questions we're going to fire at you now, because I think, again, when we have misinformation, we are misinformed, we are completely outrageous in our own thoughts, then we add our own biases, our own prejudice, our own stereotypes, and then we completely miss each other. And I don't want anybody else to miss anybody. I want people to know when you come to the scene, generally speaking, the good police officers are coming there, investigative thoughts, they are coming
to
there
help.
To disarm, to help, to be of service. not to just be, oh, all the cops came because they just want to be a part of it and kick some butt. This stuff has to be talked about. We never hear about it because we're the public. They don't tell us what you're trained in. So we don't know. Right. We just see this stuff and people freak out. So this is why this is so important. Okay, thank you for that. And now I got to tell my own story. I heard some rattling on my window one night. I'd called 911. I was freaked out, scared.
And it wasn't me.
Yeah, and it wasn't Leonard or anybody else. And I was huddled down in my room. And six sheriffs came, and I was all the thrilled. I wanted to serve them all breakfast. I was thrilled. They got there in 3 minutes tops. So when you see a lot of cops, the bigger picture, don't panic. It might be what Officer Pendleton just said. Okay, next question. What are you trained and what are you thinking just as a cop, as a person of experience? Okay, you pulled me over. Excuse me. You pulled me over. You come to my window. You say license and registration. I'm already giving you a hard time. I'm on my phone. I'm not paying attention. I'm cursing. What the hell? You know, I'm cursing you out. Where's your mind? Anybody take it?
What are you trying to hide? Are you trying to distract me from? You know, do you have a gun in the car? Are you trying to destroy some kind of evidence? If it's something just as simple as a traffic stop, why wouldn't you just simply give me your license and registration?
Amen.
Now you have me thinking, what more is going on here?
Yes. I love that. And here's why I love that, because a lot of times people are thinking, I'm going to assert my rights. This is the perfect time. I'm going to show them how much law I know from Law and Order. But the cop is not thinking like you. He's not thinking, bravo on the law. Great assertion. He or she is thinking, if this is so simple and all you did is didn't signal, and I know I pissed you off because I pulled you over and caught you and I should be doing some other life-saving, but I'm pulling you over for this in broad daylight at 2 o'clock. But you're now acting this angry? Something's not right here. I love that you just said that, West Coast. Anybody else want to answer that, or we're good? Can we move to the next one?
Well, here's the question. I have a question for you inside of that. So if you pull me over and it's just for traffic, I didn't stop at a stop sign, and I give you my registration, my license, and then you say something to me, and I say something smart to you, and you tell me get out the car. Do I have to get out the car?
If you are given a lawful order to get out of the car, you do have to comply. There's a reason why you're being asked to get out of the car. Now, as an officer, I don't want anyone out of the car unless I have good reason for them to be out of that car. I feel safer with them in it. So I'm not going to ask them to get out just because they ran their mouth. If I'm asking them to get out, it's because there's some specific reason why. There is a concept of this thing called contempt of cop, where you make an officer angry, and then he'll escalate the situation because he's angry. But that's something that that's a situational deal. It's a cultural deal that has to be handled and fixed. But I don't want you out of the car. Just because you're running your mouth, you stay in the car, I'm going to stay where I am and where I'm safe, and you can be angry. I'm still going to do what business I need to do.
I love it. Leonard?
That's what the law requires in every state.
That's what the law requires in every state?
In every state,
It's compliance. And that, you know, the police officer does have the right to take into physical custody on most of the offenses that they make contact for. And so, you know, one of the unspoken elements in this whole controversy over the last couple of years is can we kind of teach compliance and then have systems set up so that those complaints can happen with an objective third party someplace and keep everybody calm. The ego, that lizard part of the brain that I talked about earlier, that responds aggressively to ego threats as well as to actual physical threats.
And
so it really
takes a good point.
It takes a disciplined, trained officer to make sure and separate out what's causing my increase in anxiety. Do I have time to kind of rationalize that and say, are they just mad or are they trying to hide something? So that goes into brain science as well. But we're gonna have those same kind of trigger trips for an insult to our ego and sense of identity as we are to a physical threat, and we have to take that. About an eighth of a second to make a good discerning decision about where that's going to go.
Yeah, it's all prefrontal cortex, all in the brain, right, left is doing a lot of work. And the problem is it's also saving, the brain is also thinking, okay, is this a threat? Am I in danger? You know, then cop kicks in. That's why I'm trying to make the point. people think that you can turn this on and turn this off and turn this on. No, once you turn that cop on and he already had a big ego, you might just want to now shut up. You might want to just bring it all down. Because now he's so on 20, you can't get him back down sometimes, because now he's not sure if he's now saving life and going home to little Jill. He's not sure, you know, what the deal is or what have you. So that's why I'm glad we're talking about this. And we talked about it on another show, and so I just want to say right now, this is Life, Love, No Chaser. And, of course, last week we talked about your rights as a citizen, what you should and should not be doing, when there is reasonable suspicion, when does that turn into probable cause, when are you detained as opposed to being in custody and arrested, and all the whole things that people have missed about that. So if you missed that show, please download the archive. Go check it out on iTunes.
Right.
And archive it and listen to inform yourself. We're not going to get into all of that today, but I want to keep moving. Okay, so you get to the car. I take off in a full sprint, baby. I'm giving you the Heisman. What are you doing, police officers? What is your training going to do? You going to run after me? Is that the training? Because when we saw the killing in South Carolina, the first thing Leonard and I said was, okay, if you run from any cop, oh, baby, you've just started the fire.
You
all
opened
things,
the door.
Totally, yeah. So if you're shot that day, probably shouldn't be a big surprise if he lost it. Who knows what that individual cop would do. So, but we want to know, are you going to be trained to be running for us, or, you know, should we not be running? What's the thought? What is your thought?
Personally? Yes.
Either a police officer thought or
your
yes. personal thought. Sure. Anybody. West Coast, jump in. Anybody.
No, watch you run away.
Yep. That's maturity speaking. He's close to retirement. He's not chasing you.
That's right.
That's talking about it. I'll video and maybe get some units in the air and maybe set up some kind of containment, try to find you and find out why you were running. But as far as me running after you, that's not going to happen.
Like I said, that's something that comes with maturity. And you'll find that training officers, they will let their trainee run and chase, and they'll drive the car because they know you work smarter, not harder. And so if you have good reason to chase that person, then you chase them. If you don't have good reason to chase them, your radio works much faster. So it's very situational.
Let me ask you a question, Officer Pendleton. Do
yes,
innocent
ma'am.
People, in your experience, okay, and I want people to hear this completely, do innocent mm-hmm. people run when they're pulled over?
Rarely, very, very rarely, but I have had
okay.
a couple of incidents.
Okay, great. That's a good question. Okay, and a great answer. Thank you. So
well, you know, there's an Old Testament quote that says the guilty fleeth when no man pursueth. So there so there is a centuries old precedent for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I love that. So again, if you're doing something like running, you're probably not, he's not thinking, he or she, that officer, isn't thinking, oh, this is the perfect time they thought to jog. They're thinking something about your conduct. Probably don't want to run and get out your car because that just elevates the next level, okay? So, okay.
Well, let me say this, too. From a tactical point of view, you don't know if that person is running to get a tactical advantage, so if they're running for cover or they're, you know, when we call for backup, everybody's got a cell phone, they're calling for backup too. So that's really a very tense situation. It's just not, oh crap, somebody got away. It's, oh crap, I wonder if I'm going to be a target now.
Good point. So then that kicks in again that you are now in protective mode of your own life. It's not just about this person running. Great point, Dr. Schultz. I love that. I hope everybody's listening out there to understand what the dynamic really is when all of this is happening, because it's all in seconds, right? Okay, so what do you think about people, and we see this in the media, right, and the people are really combative. They don't want to get out of the car. They start telling you about their legal rights. Is that irritating to you just as a person, as a police officer? Do you want them to be doing that? What's going on in your mind? I'm just thinking personally to you, the three of you. Are you pretty level-headed when people are doing that and very patient? You know, you come to the car, you're asking for the registration, they're flipping off, they're not giving it to you, they're telling you now about their rights. I know my rights, unless you're arresting me, you know, this traffic stop has taken 2 minutes, my constitutional rights are now kicking in if you keep me longer. You know, they're going on and on and on. My father's a lawyer, so on and so forth. What is your threshold button? Is any of this triggering you to now go a little harder? What's your maximum time of patience with these kind of situations in person?
It is very situational. Very situational. Usually the people who are spouting about how they know their rights the most know them the least. They really know their rights because of what they saw on TV or what they read on social media that's not really accurate. So those situations don't turn volatile often because there's no reason for me to escalate because that person knows everything, because there's no way to retrain someone who doesn't want to be retrained or reteach someone who doesn't want to be retaught. So you just let them be belligerent and you handle your business and move on.
Okay. I love Officer Pendleton. Anybody getting pulled over by him, that's the cop to find. I love that. Okay. Anybody else?
You have to maintain your professionalism. You have to maintain your calm. You know, you can't get down into the same level with the person that's trying to do it. It just makes the situation that much worse.
I agree. Leonard, do you have any more questions, hot button questions? Because otherwise, I'm going to wrap up and we're going to be done.
Yes, I did. Here's the question.
Okay.
Let's talk about gender. So when the officers come to the car and it's a beautiful woman, her breasts are sticking out, are you more lenient on her than if you got come to the car and some dude with a wife beater T-shirt on?
No.
Oh, wow.
If you're, absolutely not.
If you're pretty or you cry, you're going to get a ticket.
If you're pretty and what, Dr. Schultz?
If you're pretty or you cry, you're going to get a ticket. I don't want you leaving saying, I got hung up on that guy.
Okay.
I love it. Leonard, that is such an ignorant question. I love it for it. I love you for that.
No,
okay.
I hear women all the time tell me I talk myself out of a ticket. You know, I see women do it all the time. And
look,
I never heard a dude say, I talk myself out of a ticket. You know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing, just to give you, you know, personally, the way I do business, okay? 9 times out of 10, if I pull somebody over, it's to warn them.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of hypocritical for me to give you a ticket for talking on your cell phone. It's kind of hypocritical for me to give you a ticket for speeding when I was doing the same thing on the way to work. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's very nice, West Coast.
I've seen it happen. You know, you cop pull somebody over, give them a ticket for talking on the cell phone, gets back in the patrol car, pick up the phone, starts talking, and drives off. Kind of meant to give you something to move.
Right.
Yeah, model the behavior you want to see. Let's take a call from the audience, just a second. Life, Love, No Chaser, you're live on the line. We have 3 wonderful police officers, over 70 years of training, almost 80. You're on the line. Are you there?
Hello. Hello.
Hi, we can hear you now. Do you have a question or comment for these lovely officers?
Yeah, two questions. That
okay.
When the officer pulls a person over, like, you know, we talked on last week, that officer was a jerk. He had a bad day, whatever was going on with him. So in that instance, you know, because that officer has a bad day, or it says you broke extremely about 3 or 4 laws within that time, say the main thing to do is to be calm. So if you run across one that has this fake ID, badge, car, and everything, and the person don't even know that they're not, they have a right to ask for your ID number and to check you out. Is that not correct?
Okay, so you're asking about, because years ago there was some cops or people for, you know, posing as police officers and sort of pulling women over and raping them. Is that what you're sort of talking about? And so are you asking
that's what
them,
I'm talking about.
So
yes,
can you then ask the cop his ID?
Right, because, you know, okay, you're out late at night coming back from service or coming back from work or whatever the case may be, an officer pulls you over and, you know, it's taking out the car. Well, basically, I'm wanting to say, okay, I'm not really trying to get in trouble with the officer, but I don't want to get out the car. I'm going to pass my license through the crack of the window because I don't know if they're a real officer or not.
So
or
what does the person do?
Even if he is a real officer, if he has this rape thing on his mind, then I'm in trouble.
Okay. So what is she to do, Dr. Schultz or Dr. Officer Pendleton, we lost West Coast Sheriff? What is she to do?
Well, I'll let the guys that are out on the street right now respond.
Okay. Officer Pendleton, what is she to do?
I think the way you handle that situation is the biggest issue. Explaining yourself and why you're concerned and what your concern is. If you're rude and belligerent and hateful, then the officer's probably not going to cooperate. But if you respectfully explain your concern, then 9 times out of 10, outside of that one small outlier, you're probably going to get someone who'll be cooperative with you and share everything with you. Just do it correct. You know, do it appropriately and respectfully, and you'll probably get a good outcome.
And I can tell you, caller, something similar happened to me. You know how those new police officer cars came out and they looked really fancy, and one was pulling me over really, really late at night and following me for a minute. But he never really quite pulled me over. He didn't put on regular lights. He put like this blue light, and I didn't want to pull over. What I did was I dialed 911, and I told them where I am, what I'm driving, and what was happening, and if they could radio that officer to maybe identify himself a little bit differently, and they were willing to do that. So that's another option that you might have. Did you had one other question?
There was 2-in-1.
Oh, 2-in-1. Okay, well, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it, and hopefully that's helpful. So don't turn up and don't act crazy, okay? So as we wrap up the show, I so appreciate, we lost our West Coast Sheriff. He probably had to go. But I just want to thank Officer Pendleton, West Coast Sheriff, who was anonymous on our show for reasons that he felt comfortable, and we respect that, and for Dr. Schultz and your time today. Just give us some parting words in the climate that we're in. You know, what do you want people to know, and what can we just do to restore hope to the community that you are working on this? And again, as I gave kudos out to Officer Pendleton and his chief of police in Norman, Oklahoma, they are very transparent with the community. They talk with the community. They share their numbers, their phone numbers. They meet with the community. They inform them constantly, immediately when things are going on, so there's no question. And they try to meet the community as much as they can. But what do you guys want to leave as parting thoughts just to really kind of help other people understand you and see you differently in a better light before mm-hmm. we tune off?
Well, I'll speak to the reality that we live in a democracy. If you don't have the kind of police department that you want, then you need to change the leadership, and that's going to happen at the ballot box. In terms of the officer on the street, if you get a chance to approach them safely, not from their blind side, and say, hey, I hope you're having a safe day, thanks for what you do, that's just going to go a long way. The thing that kind of brought mist to my eyes is when I think it was the officer was talking about his childhood experience, and he talked about this officer that had a life-changing effect on him, and he said, I don't know his name. We do these things behind a badge that makes us anonymous. And anything the public can do to bring humanity back to that, which is the focus of this program, and I appreciate it very much, will help us kind of cross the table and shake hands a little bit more frequently.
Yes, so true, so true. And that was Officer Pendleton's story. And it was a very beautiful, touching story. And Officer Pendleton, what would you like to say?
I would ask 2 things. One, just please be patient. You have no idea what may have happened with that officer before he contacted you, what he experienced. And if he is wrong, if she is wrong, then you doing something wrong is not going to fix it. So be patient, handle yourself calmly. If something does go wrong and things can get sorted out on the back end. And also, I would greatly ask more than anything else, join us. If you don't like the way things are going, join us. Put on the uniform and get out there and be the change. Don't just talk about change or expect it, but be that change. Join us. I'm a recruiter, and I'm glad to help any way we can. NewNormanCops.com, we're looking to hire. So please let us know if you want to be that change, because that's really how change happens, when you are actually a part of it.
I love that. And before we leave also, tell us again where you're from, Officer Pendleton, and what you're doing and how people can join you. Say it a little slower just in case anybody out there in Oklahoma can hear it and want to do something.
Yes, ma'am. We're in Norman, Oklahoma. We are just 20 minutes south of Oklahoma City, third largest city in the state. Our recruiting website is newnormancops.com, and we are always looking for bright young individuals who want to serve the community, who have a heart to take care of the people, and that's really what we're after. That's what our mission is, community, police, and partnerships, and we want people who have that same mindset.
And let me just also say thank you, Officer Pendleton, for sharing your beautiful story about how your life was touched. And I commend you for giving back, because so many times when you grow up in the house of abuse, you join the oppressor in those actions as you grow up and you oppress others. But instead, you've turned your life around and you've given back to the same. And so I commend you every day. And we just wish blessings upon your life and your family's life. And you stay safe over there in Norman, Oklahoma. And Dr. Schultz, can you just tell us what kind of, I mean, Dr. Schultz is very busy. He's got lots going on in terms of the National Center for Police Advocacy. Tell us what you're doing, if you have any books you've written or anything you want to promote. Please take that time now, Dr. Schultz, to tell us.
Well, thanks. I could be found at streetsmartforce.com or policeofficersvoice.com. I do want to be a police advocate, not to the detriment of the citizenry, but to continue partnerships with the citizenry. Our police officers are undergoing daily trauma. They're not getting the mental health and kind of support that they need to live healthy lives and to be healthy professionals. So we need to change that bit by bit that we can. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to share with you and your openness. And Leonard, I will say, if you ever had to run from me, you know, as the old saying goes, you can probably run faster scared than I can brave, so you probably win.
And I was going to tell
That's
Leonard,
good enough.
Officer Pendleton is looking for young and bright, so that won't qualify you for the recruitment, Leonard, so you're out on both accounts. And that
right.
is our show, gentlemen. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you, guys.
And police lives do matter. Leonard, go ahead.
Yes, they
sign
do.
Off.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say thank you again, and to my brother in Oklahoma. I was born in Muskogee, Oklahoma, just for the record.
Okie
so I
from
really
Muskogee.
Appreciate that. Oh, I'm an Okie from Muskogee, yes, sir. And I just want to thank you guys, and I just pray God's blessing upon you guys and keep you guys safe and keep you guys in perfect peace. That's my prayer for you guys, because I thank you for what you do for me, you know, and for all of us. And it's so important that people need to hear that we thank you for what you do for us. And I don't think that's been said enough. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much for your time today. We want to just give a thanks also to our West Coast Sheriff who had to go. We thank you for your time and your truth and candor as well.
Sir.
Thank you for the show. For those of you listening, thank you for your questions, and we appreciate it so much. Officers, we are going to salute you off, and you have a wonderful day, and thank you for your time. Thank you, Dr. Schultz. Thank you, Officer Pendleton, and thank you, West Coast Sheriff.
Thank you.
And please give my regards to your lovely Chief Humphrey. I just can't stop raving about that guy.
Yes,
but thank
ma'am,
him for me. All right, take care, guys. So that was our show today, Police Lives Matter. Hopefully when you were listening, you heard some heart and the truth of the beauty of the dedication and the service that it takes and is required to be day in and day out tested, to constantly have to humble your own ego, your own humanness, when you're encountering violence and danger and perceptions that may be really not working in truth at all.
It's a lot.
Okay, so if you see a police officer and you can approach him safely, just thank him. Just thank her. You know, that's a
Absolutely.
Hard job. Just stop and say, hey, you know, even if you say thank you for not pulling me over for my blown tag.
Right.
Just thank you for not
Thank you had
me.
A pound of weed in the trunk. Thank you for not stopping me.
Yeah, but we're kidding around. But really, just stop and thank an officer for their service because police lives do matter, and they do help to keep us safe. Again, there's 318 million people in the United States, and we just hear about the few things that are going on, and I'm not excusing those things. They really are significant to the people who've lost lives to police violence and altercation. But again, before you attack somebody for saying police lives matter, think about your own race. Think about your own life. Does it matter? Are you carrying yourself and governing yourself in such a way that you show that your life matters, that your child's life matters? What are you doing to continue your legacy that shows that you matter? It's not just about police. It's about all of us. It's a human race. We need to get together and come together to better understand each other so we can stop misunderstanding each other and show some more empathy because we're all going through something called life, and it's a struggle. And speaking of life, this is Life, Love, No Chaser. Join us next week. I'm sure we're going to have something crazy going on. We're going to talk about dating 101 and juicy. And I'm going to actually share my last dating disaster story
from my past.
Brace yourselves. This is Life, Love, No Chaser. You can check us out on iTunes for the archive, on Spreaker, on Stitcher, on iHeartRadio, and here on Blog Talk and on Facebook. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking the time. Police Lives Matter.
Thank you.
Over and out. Thank you, Leonard. Yeah. Take care, everybody.
Absolutely.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye. This is the show. See you later.
No Chaser.